Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Missing Frames. This is the podcast where we watch all the movies we should have seen by this point in our lives. I'm your host, Sean Eastridge. We are hanging out over here on thenerdparty.com with the likes of Nerd Nuptial, SETI Alpha 3, Aggressive Negotiations, Filibuster, Babel for 5, and so much more. So check it all out at thenerdparty.com. I am so delighted today to have a guest on that we have not had, and I want to say maybe a year. My wonderful, wonderful friend, Carly Cooper. It has been too long since your last appearance on this show.
It has been way too long.
What have we been doing? Why do I even have a podcast if you're not on it?
I know. Like we're on different time zones and we're both adults being busy and whatnot. So
yeah.
I get it. Sometimes you need to have other guests as well. I'm not offended. You know, like I'm okay with it.
Well, I'm offended. I'm offended. You should be more offended. And frankly, I'm a little upset you aren't. But we were talking. We've been trying to do another movie because we've done a couple episodes. And for those of you who don't know, I bring this up every episode, but I always assume maybe somebody doesn't know. Somebody doesn't know this, the fact that we've known each other for so many years.
And yeah.
I
more than half my life now.
Yeah, I've known you for more than half your life.
Last time it was exactly half of my life.
Yes, now it's more. So our friendship is just going to a whole other level. I don't know what percentage of my life. I didn't do the math beforehand. I probably should have.
We're probably getting close to half your life too then, because you're not much older than me.
I think you're 100% correct. I'm also glad this is the tangent we're on right now. So we're going to be watching a movie. You introduced me to one movie. We also watched a movie that neither of us had seen, which was the original Westworld.
Oh, it's so good.
It's so good. And you had worked on the TV show doing amazing effects work and things like that. And then we did Some Like It Hot because I was a terrible person. I still am to a certain extent, but I was terrible and I had never seen that movie. Nor had
You've
I ever
seen any Marilyn movie, which I'm still very like shooken to my core.
You should be more shooken because I still have not watched any Marilyn Monroe movies since.
You know what, though? I'm not going to begrudge you that, because when we watched Some Like It Hot, I told you I would send you a list of Marilyn Monroe movies to watch, like starting with what and what you should like progress through. And I haven't done that. So you can blame that on me, as you haven't been given the information to really dive into that yet. So I apologize.
Yeah, there's little more I would love to do than blame you for something and not take any responsibility. So I will do that. So this time around, I'm going to introduce you to a movie, and we were trying to figure out what we should be watching. You told me you hadn't seen the movie Clue, which is maybe one of the funniest movies I've ever seen in my life. And I haven't seen it in so long, but it's one of my favorite comedies. And I felt like, oh, you would get a kick out of that.
So it is a comedy.
It's a comedy. And it's
okay.
It's so,
then I'm very excited.
Yes, it is a comedy. It's also like one of the more fascinating productions ever. Like, it's just, where did this movie come from? Obviously, I don't know if you've heard of it, but there is a board game called Clue. And
See, that's how I know anything about this at all, is because of that board game. Because I'll be honest with you, I'm racking my brain, and I don't even think I've seen so much as like a frame from a preview. Like, I know nothing about this movie.
Well, I'm going to tell you why you probably don't know anything about this movie, because when the movie was released, it was not a big hit. It was released in 1985. It kind of went into theaters and then very quickly disappeared. And I don't know why. I think maybe people were like, is that a board game? Is that based on the board game? What is this? Is it supposed to be a good movie? I guess the confusion was merited. There was also a whole thing where, depending on where and when you saw it, there were different endings that they put at the end. Yeah. And the version, I mean, the movie that exists on streaming and on Blu-ray, I believe is the one that just includes like all the best endings. So there are a couple different endings in this movie. So it's a quirky movie. I guess people were turned off by the fact that it's like, oh, it's based on a board game. Also, how many times do I... Yeah, and they were also confused by the fact that it's like, how many times do I have to see this? This is weird. I have to see it three or four times to get all the different endings. So I think that kind of hurt it. But the movie itself is actually really brilliant. I think it's
Wait,
one of
so
the...
Was it intended to be that way? Like, as if different audiences were playing different versions of the board game, so they would get different outcomes?
Yes.
So it wasn't like, oh, this played out bad. We're not making any money. Release this with a different ending. It was intentionally confusing that way.
It was intentionally released as like, there are different endings. Maybe this will entice people to come back and see the movie again and see if they can get all the endings.
But it wasn't good enough to merit going back on its own.
Well, it's not that it wasn't
good. Is what I'm hearing.
I would never say that. As far as I remember, it's been years since I last saw this, but it is so funny. I think the problem is trying to get people to come see it in the first place. Because again, I think the idea of a successful, like, well put together movie based on any property that's board game related is probably not that. Like, I don't think I would fault anybody for saying I don't want to see a movie based on a board game. If you look at movies,
I mean,
like,
Jumanji,
you know,
Jumanji was great,
but Jumanji also was a board game after the fact.
True, that's
so,
how you got to do it.
That's how you got to do it. If Clue had been the movie first and then the board game, it would have been way more successful.
Yeah, probably.
But that's, I think that was why it just didn't, people didn't know what to make of it. But the thing is, it like had amazing talent involved. You have Tim Curry, he's in the movie, Christopher Lloyd, Michael McKean, Martin Mull, like all these amazing, amazing.
Which
hysterical...
character does Tim Curry play? Is he like Colonel Mustard?
Oh, he's the butler.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, okay, I can see that.
It is, I honestly don't know much. I need to learn more about this movie. I'll learn more by the time we come back to talk about it. But I know so very little about this film. I know that John Landis was involved with coming up with the story. And John Landis is like a really famous comedy director. He'd done The Blues Brothers and Animal House. And he'd also done an American.
I wonder what drew him to wanting to come up with a movie about a board game then. You know,
I don't know. I guess what I think is he might have, maybe it was just one of those things where they were like, I have a fun idea. Let's see if we can make this.
Yeah.
And they
because
all got
like you could just make like a classic, you know, like whodunit kind of murder mystery, you know, like a party at a fancy house and not have any ties to Clue. But maybe he wanted to do that and got some kind of deal with like the game people and got funding that way if he tied it to that.
Maybe that's what it was. And they thought like, hey, let's throw this together. I mean, the movie was only, I mean, it's 1985. So this is, you have to adjust for inflation, but it was like a $15 million budget. So it's not like a huge movie. It was apparently very like the production all came together. It was very fast. No one who was involved with the movie, like all the cast members are like, it was a blur. We were all on drugs. Nobody knows what's happening. But like the movie, I don't want to say too much because I want you to be hopefully pleasantly.
I'm excited.
Hopefully pleasantly surprised by it. But from watching the movie, it's kind of shocking to me. I think it has a bit of a cult status now, but I almost feel like there still aren't enough people talking about how brilliant this film is. Because I remember, maybe I'm wrong. I mean, the last time I watched it, I was probably in high school or college, but I just remember thinking it was one of the funniest things I'd ever seen. And it's so quotable and there's so much in it that is so brilliant. It's just amazing that it was just kind of a tossed off thing that somehow was also brilliant.
Well, now I'm really excited that I've like not seen this so that I'm able to have this experience with you of like hearing your excitement about it. Like now I kind of maybe get how you felt a little bit when I introduced you to Some Like It Hot.
Yeah, I think you're gonna like it. I think you're gonna like it.
I'm sure I will, because I like quirky, like weird movies. Like I grew up liking Monty Python and I don't know, like just like weird outlandish humor where and I love the game Clue. Like, I remember that being a game that I liked a lot as a kid. Okay, let me just ask you this because I'm wondering how much it is based off of the board game. Is there any addressing to like the lack of ability for people to just move freely without or throughout the house or the castle? Like, do people like, oh, you can only like, you know, go this far? And
I'm gonna play coy and say you'll have to find out, but I'm also playing coy because I don't remember. All I remember is the movie is, it reminds me a little bit of like the Lego movie. I don't know if you saw that, but the Lego movie was almost way more brilliant and clever than it had any right to be, considering it was just like, it's a Lego, it's a property, let's make a quick buck. It was like way more thoughtful and sweet and funny than it had any right to be. That's kind of how I feel about
it. I loved that movie.
Yeah, that's kind of how I feel about Clue, where Clue is, it's not like a heartfelt movie like the Lego movie is, but it's just as zany and madcap in a way that's like, this is too good to be just a movie that's based on a board game. But also the way they reference the board game is very clever and fun.
Do you think that it's a little bit, it was a little bit ahead of its time?
Oh, for sure. I think that's why the movie didn't do as well. But, you know, it's definitely, there's some Monty Python vibes in it. You brought that up. They're definitely, I think that's why you'll like this, because there's that sense of that comedic styling. But I think it's maybe because people, again, would not expect a movie based on a board game like Clue to actually be clever and fun and a great comedy on its own terms. The brand of Clue almost hurt it in a way. Like, it could have just been a completely random murder mystery, but the fact that it's Clue gives it that extra edge to be more special in a way. So I think it's ahead of its time, but also it was ahead of its time in terms of it could have been like a really cynical cash grab, and maybe it kind of was, but it was also a bunch of really talented people came in and made it something special, which I think we see a lot more nowadays. There's still things like, you know, there's the Battleship movie, which I've never seen.
Oh, I didn't see that. Not interested.
No, I'm sure it's terrible.
Think about like the board games that they had to choose from of what to make a movie about, like Sorry, couldn't really do anything with that. Chutes and Ladders, that would be not so great. Like, just people sliding
Mouse
around.
Trap.
Or you know, they did do a Mousetrap movie, didn't they?
Oh no. I wonder if it's as good as this one.
I'm gonna guess not. Even though I haven't seen this yet, now I just have really high expectations because of like you knowing my sense of humor and like me understanding like your appreciation for silliness and whatnot. Like, I feel like I'm going to very much enjoy this.
Yes. I'm almost nervous. I'm now like, oh, have I hyped it up too much? Again, I haven't seen it in a while. I'm basing this choice off the fact that I remember loving it from my high school years, and also the fact that I saw it a little bit more recently and just thought it was the most brilliant thing ever. So I think we're in for a treat.
We chose a fun, like lighthearted movie versus some of the other ones that were a little like more darker or like scarier or whatever. Cause I feel like now's the time for people to maybe watch something that will make them laugh instead of something that scares them.
I was going to say, when we picked this, I was like, this is good. This is better than like something really depressing. I think we all need a little bit of a break from all the crazy like coronavirus stuff. All these people, no one is social distancing in the movie, but they are all stuck in a house together.
So they're quarantined in a way
you could apply that. There you go. There's a social commentary that's very ahead of its time. Who would have thought that they could have predicted COVID-19? But
is there anything about hand washing?
Oh, maybe there. I hope there is.
I think we should just agree to try and find as many references to what's going on today and talk about how ahead of its time Clue was and how it actually predicted this happening and how itself was a clue to our future.
I love this. I think we should do this. Let's make this happen.
Conspiracy theories and clues.
Clue called COVID-19. That is the pitch. That's the pitch.
You heard it here first.
We're about to find out how accurate it is. So let's do it. Let's watch Clue, and we will be back to find out how much of COVID-19 it predicted.
Awesome.
Now available to own on video cassette.
All right, we're back. Carly, how do you feel now that you've seen Clue? Was it everything you wanted it to be?
It was, and it wasn't.
I felt the exact same way. It was so weird watching it after praising it so much in the first part of the episode. I was like, oh, this isn't nearly as funny as I remember it being, but it is still very funny at points.
There were so many moments where I laughed or I went, Like, okay, so at the very beginning, the opening credits, I immediately was like, oh, because it said starring in alphabetical order. And the fact that they have to specify alphabetical order just immediately makes me think that there was some issue with who the actual star of this film was. And that, like, production didn't quite work it out. So the way to, like, just ease everyone's, like, frustration about that is just be like, oh, we're just doing it in alphabetical order.
That seems like the most political way to be like, nobody has top billing, you're all equal. And in this case, it kind of works.
Yeah, but I mean, it should have been Tim Curry. You know, like, he's the one who, like, orchestrates everything. He's kind of the narrator throughout the entire story. He's the one that explains everything. So, like, really, that character should have been, but he wasn't as known as some of the other actors, so...
But he was also, he'd been in Rocky Horror Picture Show, so he was a pretty big star. I don't know, because he was playing a completely different character, and that character was so reliant on, like, the makeup and the costume, so it definitely wasn't, like, Tim Curry is the one we know. I think he was known by that point, but I think the fact that the last 30 minutes of the movie is him running around like at top speed and explaining everything. I know in a later interview, he said that he like had to get medication for high blood pressure because of his energy levels during that scene.
Oh my gosh, that's hilarious.
But I do think you're right. He deserves top billing, if not for everything else, at the very least for that last 30 minutes. Well, but he does kind of drive everything.
He does. And I also read that originally it was supposed to be Rowan Atkinson, Mr. Bean, who was playing that character. But at the time, that would have been great. But at the time, nobody knew who he was. He was really just like a British star. So like he hadn't, you know, jumped into the Mr. Bean role yet. But like, so it's just kind of funny. You know, the way that the bill, like I just immediately in watching, I was like opening and it was like, oh, they can't even agree on who the star is. This is going to be great.
But you know what? That kind of gives the impression that maybe there was some issues on set as far as like the cast not getting along. But from everything I've read and all the behind the scenes stuff, it sounds like everyone involved in this movie had an absolute blast. So if there was anything, it wasn't ego of the stars, it was just the, I guess, the production, like the marketers saying, oh, just
maybe
alphabetical order.
But also, because I also read that Carrie Fisher was cast as Miss Scarlet.
I know, how great
she went into rehab 4 days before production started. So maybe like them having to like rework some casting things, and you know, like maybe that took place or like had part in why it was listed that way. But I just always think it's like those stupid little details I know like people don't pay attention to, but that was the first thing that pops up on the screen after Clue, and I was like, ooh, yes, there's gonna like, be some like weirdness. Uh-oh, what like, happened there?
You were basically like, could this be the first Clue in Clue?
Yes, exactly. No, but then I love when we're being introduced to all the characters. I love, you know, that Tim Curry's character, Wadsworth, he carries, like, that bag of meat so that he can just give it to the dogs. And then he ends up stepping in, like, the dog poo. So then as people are introduced to him, he just, like, smells like shit. it.
Classic move. Classic move. Stepping in the dog poo.
And then I love when we're meeting Miss Scarlet. And firstly, when you first see her, I was like, that coat, what's going on with that? Is it a hood? Is it a collar? Like, I liked it, but I was very confused about what it was.
And she looked like she was like, from the future.
Yeah, it's like a Jetsons outfit.
Yes.
And then when she's trying to like get somebody to help her, she does the, you know, kind of like stereotypical, like showing a little like leg or whatever. Mm. But instead of showing a little leg, she bends over the hood of the car and sticks her ass.
I thought that was great. I also love when they pull up to the house. And so Christopher Lloyd, it's crazy to think this movie came out the same year as Back to the Future. So Christopher Lloyd had this, and obviously one was a much bigger hit than the other, but it was great seeing him in this movie. And I love when they pull up to the house and she's like, why did the car stop? And he goes, because it's frightened.
And then when she first jumped in the car and they realize they're going to the same place, it's not raining yet, and he turns on the wipers really hard. Squeak, 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 squeak.
Sarah pointed that out too. She's like, it's not raining. And I'm like, I know.
But then in the next scene it was. So it's
and then it was pouring.
Yeah, then it was pouring. But it's just like those little details happen so often in this movie, and they're very like dry comedy. But I love that kind of stuff. I think that stuff is hilarious. So I was laughing at a lot of parts where I'm sure people would be like, why is that funny? And it's like, do you not get it?
I think that's part of the movie's appeal, too. It's one of those movies that once you love it, you love all of it. And everything suddenly goes from being moderately funny to being the most funny thing you've ever seen in your life. That was what surprised me most, is I'd forgotten about a lot of it, and I know this movie's funny, but the first 20 to 30 minutes or so, I was like, this feels kind of slow and it's a little dull, like as they're introducing characters and they have these little bits, but like the dinner table and setting up the mystery and everything, I was kind of like, this is kind of boring.
It was. And the whole time, like while I was watching it, I was thinking, why are any of these people here? Like, you get a strange letter in the mail saying that it would be in your benefit to come to this dinner, signed a friend, you know? And I'm like, well, like, I wouldn't go to that. Like, that just seems like a recipe for disaster. And then you find out they're being blackmailed. So then it makes sense why they're there. But then throughout the course of the movie, there are so many opportunities where they can all just leave.
Yes.
And then that's the end of it. And nobody does that.
I think they're all like, they keep coming up with excuses. Like one person's like, I'm going to leave. And the other person's like, if you do, I'm going to tell the cops you did it. So they try to come up with ways to keep them all in the house. They do a pretty good job of that. And also there's, you have to take it with a pretty big grain of salt because the movie is almost knowingly absurd.
Like the first time you meet the maid, she's just jiggling, and the whole point is you're staring at her boobs. Like, that's the point of that character, which apparently is why she was even cast in the first place, Colleen Camp.
Jonathan Lynn, the director, he said, that's basically it.
Because Madonna was up for that role, and I forget who else was, but there were like some notable people, but Colleen Camp came in to the audition in a French maid outfit and like really was like over the top about it. But what clinched for her the role was the fact that she was very well endowed.
And I do love, I love that the director is like, yeah, I'll admit it. And,
but it was just hilarious because I mean that character really like, what maid honestly like would dress like that? Like you're not protecting yourself from any of the chemicals you might be using or dust, you know.
I wondered. I couldn't figure out. I was like, whose maid is she? Is she Mr. I guess she's Mr. Body's maid. So I was like, well, I guess the sleazy guy would make his maid dress like that. That was the only justification I could come up with. And also, it's just, again, it's ridiculous and absurd. And so the first 20 minutes, I'm like, oh, I love all these actors. This is all great. Mm-hmm. But nothing, it's not like the jokes don't really start landing until Mr. Body is killed, or allegedly is killed. He's killed a couple times.
I thought there were some funny jokes like throughout dinner. Just a couple little like offhanded things. Like, I love Mrs. Peacock, where she's going on and on and on and on and on and would not stop talking. And then she's like, "The soup is delicious." Right. And then about Miss Scarlet saying that she'll eat anything. Like, there were a couple jokes in there that were pretty funny, but you're right. Like, it wasn't really, like, I think, yeah, it was a lot of missed opportunities in the first 20 minutes where they weren't really, like, obvious jokes.
That's where you have to kind of really, like, win over the audience, and it takes a little bit of time. And I think, again, I was thinking of it from the perspective of audiences who saw the movie, and not a lot of people saw the movie, but I imagine you're kind of sitting there waiting for it to be hilarious, and it's kind of like, this is moderately funny. And then about 20 minutes in, then it starts to get really goofy and wacky and slapsticky, and everybody is running around and being crazy.
Yeah, but to your point, it's hard for you to maybe care at that point, because you've already been 20 minutes in and you're like, oh, now? Like, yeah, so I feel like if it had maybe picked up a little bit quicker, I might have enjoyed it a little bit more. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I did think it was really funny, but I do think that there is some kind of, like, nerve to a film to spend the last 20 minutes going over everything you've just seen. And it's like, yeah, we all saw that. And that was a bunch of stuff that we didn't care about and was boring. So now you're making me re-go through all of that when we were all there.
Yeah, I think in those moments, Curry really sells it. It's really, I imagine reading those lines in the script, it was like, this is going to be terrible unless Tim Curry goes insane and just starts running around like a crazy. Because it is. It's just recounting, like, and then we went here, and then we ate here, and then we were in here, and then the cook was in there. So it's just, it is absolutely manic. I think probably what really works about this movie for me, because the problem is, it's not, the characters aren't well drawn, but the actors playing them are so funny and bring so much personality to it. Everything on the page is kind of like, this is okay, but then there are also, like, very clever lines, like, I, you know, she threatened to kill her husband in public, and she's like, why would you kill your husband in public? And she goes, and Tim Curry responds, I think she meant to say she threatened in public to kill her husband. There are lots of really great smart lines like that that I love that always make me laugh. And then there are, like, simple, like, goofy, slapsticky things that happen that are so... They're almost juvenile. They're so,
like,
simple.
The first, like, fight scene that happens with Mr. Body, and he does that, like, that two finger poke in the eyes.
Right.
Oh my God. It was like, that's ridiculous.
So why is this happening? Well, even like when Wadsworth is yelling, he's like, I'm shouting. And the candlestick falls on his head. And for some reason, I find that to be one of the funniest things I've ever seen in my life.
When they were talking about all the blackmail and the reasons why people were being blackmailed, and you find out that Mrs. White, I guess, chopped off her husband's junk, all of the men simultaneously cross their legs.
Yes, there's a lot. This movie is almost bordering on the brilliance of a movie like Airplane or The Naked Gun. That similar brand of comedy.
The whole time I was watching it.
Yeah, it's always almost there, and it never quite reaches that level of brilliance. But there are things in the movie that are that funny. Like, there are moments that are so funny that I'm like, this is just great. Like, they're like, oh, what about the cook? And they go into the kitchen. They're like, oh, nobody's here. And then she falls out of the closet. And he's like, oh, I didn't do it. Also, can somebody help me? Seriously, can someone help me, please?
And Mrs. Scarlet goes over there holding a cigarette, just kind of looking at him, and nobody helps him.
Yes, exactly. There are lots of little moments like that that I think are... It gets even better the more you watch it.
I feel like part of the issue might have been the fact that this movie and the style of, like, comedy that it is would have really been better suited for an adult audience And if they had leaned into that and not made it, you know, obviously it's based off of board games. So they're expecting, you know, it needs to be kind of like a family movie where kids can go see it too. But if they had really leaned into that like airplane style and a little more adult humor, because I mean, sure, it is a game, but it's based off of a murder mystery, which isn't really like a child theme or like a family themed movie, you know, like it being about murder. So if they had like leaned into that adult thing a little bit more, I feel like it would have been a little more successful. But who knows? I mean, because it was the first film ever based off of any board game. So it's kind of uncharted waters. So.
It's the first. And honestly, could we call it the best? It probably is. I don't know if there's another board game.
I know that we talked about how Jumanji was based off of the movie, like the board game was based off of the movie, but I think that the revamping of the Jumanji movie, the first one, I haven't seen the second one, but I think they did such a good job on handling like how a movie, like from a game and like the gaming aspects of it. I think that the first new Jumanji movie that came out like did an excellent
job. The one with the
rock? Yes.
Yeah.
Like in the way that they dealt with it being a video game and like the jokes within that, like I thought they really, really did a good job where they still made sure that you understood that it was a game. But obviously, like this is different because it's just based off of the story about a board game, which, you know, like again,
Jumanji almost it had more working against it because you were making a sequel to this classic movie. I mean, it's not a great movie, but the Robin Williams movie is so beloved. So they kind of had more stacked against them, but they went in a completely different direction. And I agree. It's almost like accidentally the best video game movie
ever. It's so good.
In the same way that Jumanji, the original Jumanji, is accidentally the best board game movie ever, even though neither of them are based on a board game or a video game, they kind of take the energy and the thrill of what that might be.
Yeah.
And they kind of do implement it in a way that's very effective, in a way that Clue does a very good job of like the character names are there. Apparently the layout of the house is exactly as it is.
It is exactly
on
the same.
Board game.
And the shortcuts are exactly the same.
And then also you have all the weapons are in there. They found a clever way to get everything in there. It's just then the movie just becomes sort of its own thing and just loses track of whatever relation to the game, which I think is it almost makes it better because of the fact that they were like, it's kind of Clue, but also it's just this ridiculous
movie. The thing is with Clue, you know, like every game is a little bit different being on who, what, with, you know, where, and they tried to achieve that by having different endings, but obviously that didn't work out so well.
And you got to see all three endings, right?
Yes. Yeah. And then, so there was a fourth ending that was a lot darker, and I read about it, and it was just like, yeah, we can't end up putting that one in where Mrs. Peacock gets shot and she dies instead of just getting arrested. Yeah. But so, and what I also read is that, like, some theaters were posting A, B, and C along with like Clue, like what times that they were going to be playing which ending, so it wouldn't be such a like a crapshoot of you being like, am I going to go see the same ending again? You would kind of know, oh, I've already seen A, so I want to go see B. But I think the problem is that the movie itself, like aside from that ending, wasn't successful enough for you to want to go back and see another way that it was told, especially because like the last 20 minutes is just him running around showing you what happened. So it's like, I'm gonna have to rewatch all of that just to get this last 3 minutes to be different.
Exactly. And I think the other problem is the first two endings are fine, but they're not the most satisfying ending is the last ending that ends with like, they're all guilty. They all did it. And also it has the amazing line where, what's her name? She's talking about like, I was so mad. The flames on the side of my face. Like that line is so brilliant and is so like such a quotable line and one of the most iconic lines from the movie. Can you imagine seeing the movie and not getting one of the best lines? It also has the other best line, one of my favorite lines that I've used constantly, which is, I'm going to go home and sleep with my wife. Like that,
I know, and then it's like freeze frame.
That is such a wonderful ending. And the other two, and I was thinking about it as I was watching, I was like, if that had been the end of the movie I was watching, like the chandelier falls behind him and he goes, whoa, that's not a good ending. And the second ending, I can't even remember exactly what it is, but that one wasn't that satisfying either. The only really satisfying ending is the third one, where Michael McKean is as Mr. Green. He's like, I'm actually an FBI agent. They're all guilty. And now I've got this great punchline at the end.
Yeah, that's the only ending that works. Yeah, because the whole time you think he's gay. And then he's like, now I'm going to go and have sex with my wife.
Exactly. It's so funny. It's just a goofy line and it's hysterical. But it's true. It's like, I completely get why this movie flopped. Like you said, the movie itself, like the first, it's only an hour and a half. So it's a short movie, but it was even shorter without the extra ending. So you're talking about a movie that's less than 90 minutes, that is manic and energetic, but also depending on which ending you got, kind of underwhelming. So there is no reason why you'd want to go back. I know Roger Ebert in his review really criticized the movie. A lot of people, this movie got slammed critically. A lot of people, I think, were really, I don't know that they were looking at the movie so much as they were looking at the marketing scheme behind the endings of the movie. And I completely
and I think
get
that's
that.
Really, what it was like, I feel like they were kind of attempting something that they thought was like a surefire, you know, like, oh, you know what? Even if this movie doesn't do well, if we have enough people that like it enough that want to go see it three times, it'll make it seem as if it's more successful than it really was. And unfortunately, you know, like, I actually looked up the movies that came out the same time of year in that.
Oh, what else did?
December 1985. Okay. So they had Spies Like Us, which came out two weeks before. Or not even. It came out on December 6th and Clue came out on the 13th. So like a week before. The Jewel of the Nile came out on December 11th.
And that's a sequel to Romancing the Stone, which is really popular.
Yeah. The Color Purple came out on December 18th. And then Christmas, they had, this is ridiculous though, Howling 2, Your Sister is a Werewolf. Murphy's Romance, which was a huge box office hit. But so like, it was going up against some stuff that was like, you know, more interesting that like, if you go see a movie every weekend, you're thinking, okay, this movie comes out, if people love it, then maybe they'll want to go the next weekend. Well, the next weekend there was The Color Purple, which was a smash. And Out of Africa, which was also a smash. So like, you know, like, and then the following weekend and the following, like, you just didn't have the,
there's no place.
No, there's no place for it. And as much as I love the game, I just couldn't imagine like a scenario in which, like, I feel like if they had strayed away from the fact that it was Clue and just done a murder mystery, because, like, this was one of the last in this period of, like, mansion murder movies that were coming out, you know, that started kind of in the mid-70s. So, like, there was a market for that, but I feel like they just kind of missed the mark a little bit with trying to just tie it too much into Clue, the game. And trying to figure out a way to incorporate these characters instead of just allowing like a cool kind of murder mystery story, but have it in the vein of comedy, like Airplane. You know, like Airplane's a very dramatic movie if you think about it, because it's like a plane up in the sky and it's got issues and it's going to crash. You know, like that's high stakes, but it's hilarious the way that they deal with it. So they could have gone along the same vein where this is high stakes and there is a murderer in this house at this dinner party, and there could be a better reason for all of these people having to be here. But because they had to tie it into the characters of Clue, they were really limited to what they could do with that.
Yeah, I agree. I think part of the problem is this movie kind of, it needs the brand. Otherwise, why does it exist? Like the fact that this is the Clue movie almost makes it even better in a way, because the fact that it's you're like, I completely agree with everything you're saying. I think it was just a marketing nightmare, and all the decisions they made surrounding the movie's release prove that. And it proves, like, during like during Christmas season, I think they're thinking, oh, the families are going to want to go see this movie. It's
and they're going to want to buy the box. They're going to want to buy the board game. They're going to want to buy all the merch and stuff. And it's like, well, I mean, but it needs to be a good movie. Yes, it is a very popular board game, but it needs to be a movie. Because like we were talking about before, you couldn't make a movie out of Chutes and Ladders. If you made a movie about life, like, I mean, come on. You couldn't make a movie about Scrabble. Like, there's Clue, I guess, might have been the obvious choice at the time, but I don't know. Yeah.
But looking, the fact that it exists as the movie version of Clue is almost like, it has to, in a way. It almost has to, because otherwise the movie just disappears. But there's something so hilarious and weird and insane about the fact that it's like, yeah, we made a movie based off the board game Clue, and this is what it was. It's like this insane movie with completely, like, the movie is so, like, absurd and zany, and at a certain point it doesn't even really have anything to do with Clue anymore. It's just its own movie.
And
that, to me,
is very fun. It is a fun watch, but I wouldn't pay three times to go see the three different
endings. I wouldn't either. You put all the endings on the movie and you make it that way, but
and then you could have even done the thing. Do you remember when they were allowing audience to, like, vote on stuff in theaters?
I think so. I remember there was a period where they were trying that to see how it would go.
Like, that kind of would have been cool for Clue if that had been something where they allowed the fans of the movie to decide, like, who actually did it. Like, you be the detective, you decide. And you could maybe, like, write in, you know, another marketing scheme or whatever, but you put all three in front of the full audience and you let them see and you let them decide. And then that dictates maybe, like, something along that gets released later with the box, the VHS release, or, you know, whatever.
And I think, you know what's funny, too? I was just thinking about the third ending, which is easily the best ending. That is the only time where anybody says, it was everyone in the library with the wrench or with the revolver. Like, it's the only time anyone says that in the movie. And so, again, you're robbing audiences who went and happened to get the first two endings of all the best moments. And and again, if there's anything we know about Clue, it's that at the end you pick who did it, how they murdered them, like what weapon they used, and in which room they do it. And I don't think they ever say that again in the rest of the movie. So I agree with you.
No, I mean, I was just like, I also thought it was a little bit weird. I mean, I get it. Like, you need to introduce these aspects because of the game. Like, and Tim Curry does the whole thing where he's like, we need to figure out who did it, what room it was in, and what they killed him with. You know, like, he states that because those are the rules of the game and that's how you play. But it was very odd to me when they were all gifted these weapons. And I felt like that was kind of a really lazy way of introducing this stuff. And by turning it into a thing where it's like, you can either kill him or wait here. You know, like, it was just kind of like, I felt, I mean, again, I'm not a writer. And I know that there was some struggle when it came to the writing of this film. So, like, but I just feel like, the fact that they were in a mansion, there could have been these random items placed all over the home, like the candlestick. There could have been a revolver in a desk drawer. That wrench could have been in the cellar. The rope could have been in that closet. A pipe, you know, like, all this stuff could have been placed around, and these people could have been fearing for their lives and picking up these random objects to, like, protect themselves. And then ended up, like, dropping them in various places. And that would have been a more interesting way to introduce all of these, like, viable options of weapons instead of just being gifted at the beginning and say, use these.
And being like, hey, here, you know what these are, right? These are the things that are from the board game. I agree. I think your version of the movie is probably way better. So there's a lot of stuff that doesn't work about the movie. What are the things that did work for you? What were the things you really enjoyed that really stood out? Do you have a favorite quote or a favorite character?
Okay, well, so, you know, we talked about this, like, whole COVID-19 thing. We're going to try and figure out how this predicts it.
I was about to ask. I want to know.
So, when they were talking about how Mr. Boddy was blackmailing everybody, and they were talking about how our Tim Curry says, of course he wasn't going to, you know, like, let it go. He found a way to make money off of this opportunity. What's more American than that? And of course, it immediately made me think of their toilet paper crisis. How, you know, like people are hoarding toilet paper and capitalizing off of that and then like reselling it online. And what's more American than that?
So Clue called the toilet paper hoarding. We've got that. Yes. All right, perfect.
And then there was also another line. I forget who said that, but they said Armageddon is upon us. And it was like, I think later with the FBI agent. Oh, yeah, yeah. It was when he was pretending to be like the Bible salesman, the Jesus person. Yeah, yeah. And that, of course, you know, like we're dealing with the end of the world right now. So there were a couple things in there where I was like, okay, I could see it. But I really enjoyed, genuinely, I really enjoyed the aesthetic of the movie. I really liked the feel of the mansion. I loved the costuming. I thought that was great. I was a little indifferent with the ideas that they chose to do the opposite color palette for the female characters. Like with Miss White, she was in all black, except that one time you see where she takes her coat off and it's got this beautiful white satin on the inside. And like that, that was a moment and I loved that. And then Miss Peacock, her
looks like a peacock.
But the thing is, and what I was reading is that in her costume, all of the plumage in her hair was actually feathers from a female peacock, which is why they don't look like traditional peacock feathers. So there still were, you know, peacock elements to her, which I thought was pretty cool and clever, and it wasn't so like on the nose. But with all of the male characters, they did go in line with like what kind of their color scheme was. So I was interested as to why like the costumer chose to go the opposite with the women. But I mean, that's like a minor thing, you know, like not everybody pays attention to that, but I'm a big fan of costuming elements.
No, this is good. This is great.
And then I loved all of the silly camp that was in it. And that was just kind of like so like iconic in the 80s. With a lot of the, like, okay, so when they were running, when Tim Curry was running up the stairs at one point to explain, like, what had happened, and he's dragging Miss White with him, and he just kind of leaves her in the middle of the stairs.
I love that so much.
I was laughing so hard.
She just falls over.
Yeah, and then, like, when they were all trying to decide who they were going to split up with, all of the men wanted to go with the French maid except the gay character, which that was really funny, and then he was the one that ended up being stuck with her. So, like, there were these, like, really funny jokes within that. I mean, and, of course, if you get to that one end where you realize he's not gay, but the other endings he is. So that was kind of a little bit, I think, frustrating where the endings didn't necessarily mean that anything that happened in the beginning stayed the same. You know, like it would, I feel like it would have been more effective if in the beginning, the things like, you know, like him, his character being homosexual, that should have carried through all the way to the end, or it should have been revealed he wasn't actually homosexual in every single one of those, you know, like.
Yeah, it was, it's very frivolous. So it makes the whole, the movie is kind of runs with this vibe of it's like, it's just tossed off in fun, which it is, but it also is tossed off in fun at the expense of genuine meaning. And you're right. Yeah. Having those multiple endings just reminds you of like, well, what's the point of all this? None of this actually meant anything. If we have two or three different endings, which ending is the real? And of course they say, but this is how it really happened for the third one. But having multiple endings in the first place is kind of like, so none of this really matters at the end of the day. And I think that's the vibe of Clue in general, is it's like, it's fun. It's madcap. You're not really going to be invested in it more than that. Speaking of funny moments, another moment that I think I will laugh. This is something where I will laugh every single time I see it, and not just right, like a chuckle. I will flat out laugh. I think it's the funniest moment in the entire movie is when after Mr. Body, like they find him in the bathroom and he like it falls on Mrs. Peacock and she's like, oh my God, nah! And they get him off her. And then she's like, oh, I feel faint. And Wadsworth goes, oh, she's going to faint. Quick, fall into my arms. And she just falls right through his arms. That is, I will laugh every single time that happens. And it's like a genuine belly laugh. I find
that
so
funny.
No,
that was so good. I agree. There were so many funny moments like that where it was just the physical comedy was hilarious. Like the French maid running down the stairs at one point. I forget what moment. I think it was when like the doorbell rang. They're all running down the stairs. The way that she runs down the stairs is some of the most exemplary physical comedy I've ever seen in my entire life. Because of just how she's running, but because of her like need to constantly be jiggling, because that's like character that you always need to be focused on her heaving breath. Like it's just it's amazing. There are so many moments where it's hilarious, but it is very far and few between, and they're so minor and they're background detail moments, you know.
Yes. Yeah, there's a lot of the movie has so many, you know, that the people making the movie are having a ton of fun and you mm-hmm. know they're smart, and it makes you wish like, oh, if only it had been a little bit faster, especially in the beginning, yeah. a little bit funnier, a little bit tighter. And the jokes, some of the jokes are funny, moderately funny, but they don't land as much. Mm-hmm. But I wanted more things like, speaking of the French maid, when Mrs. Peacock is like, oh, I need to go to the restroom. Do you have a restroom? And she goes, wee, wee. And she goes, no, I just need to powder my nose.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Things like, you need more of that. There wasn't enough of that in this movie. For some reason, I remember there being a lot more of that.
I mean, there was a good amount. And like, okay, so when they were recanting, you know, what was going on, and Tim Curry's running around and he throws Mr. Green into the bathroom. And he closes the door, and like immediately when Mr. Green comes out, like you hear a toilet flush and he's like washing his hands. Like, so it's like he had just got thrown in there and he's like, well, I might as well use this.
That's what I also think this movie, if you're a fan of this movie and you love this movie, there's a lot you can find in this movie to justify your fandom. Like, I was going to ask you, the movie is obviously a cult classic now, which is uh-huh. really nice vindication, because it seems like everyone involved really put their hearts into it.
Yeah.
They had a lot of fun making it. Do you think the cult classic status is justified in this movie's case? Can you see why people love it?
100%. I mean, like, some of these characters are making out with the dead bodies to try and, like, convince the police officer that nothing like nefarious is going on. It's just, you know, kind of a sexy party. And like, he's like, oh, nothing illegal in there, just a couple people having a good time enjoying themselves.
Right.
Like,
right.
That when that was happening, and Mrs. Peacock and I think it was maybe Colonel Mustard, they were holding up the chef. And she's standing behind her and putting her hands all over his back, and he's holding on to her. And it's just like, oh my God, like, this is so insane and nutty. And so I totally get why people like it now, and why, and I completely see why it missed the mark then. I do, however, think that if it was done exactly how it was done, like the same script, you know, obviously different casting because of age and whatever, but like same exact script, and if it was done the same exact way today, I still don't think it would be a hit, and I don't think there would be a cult following. I feel like a big part of the reason why it has this cult following is because it's of the era of these 80s movies that just have this charm to them because of the time that they're from, that people have this nostalgia for.
I think it's that, but I also think cable TV had a lot to do with it. That was the first way I saw it. It would play on cable all the time. So people, this is the era of films that were like kind of forgotten, and nobody, like A Christmas Story, is another good example. A Christmas Story was not a big hit. It was kind of, it had mixed reception, but then because like, I don't know if it's TNT or TBS, they did their 24-hour marathon of A Christmas Story. People started watching it, and all of a sudden it took on this like status of this golden classic film. It's kind of the same thing with Clue. Clue isn't as good as A Christmas Story, not close, but Clue had the same sort of like, it's just on, I remember being a kid and just being like, what is this movie? This is Clue? This is based on the board game Clue? This is so funny. Like, this is so random. What a strange thing. But I think that's what happened. I think a lot of the and of course that doesn't happen anymore. Everyone is streaming movies. So a movie that would be released today wouldn't go to cable television. It wouldn't find that same audience that's just flipping through the channels looking for something to watch. We have too many options. Cable television isn't really a thing anymore. It's slowly disappearing. Streaming would make it impossible for this movie to have the reputation. That kind of speaks to what you're saying, but I think also the mood of like through the midnight or through the 90s all the way into the early 2000s, this is the kind of movie that you could find and discover. And it's harder, like if you saw this in your Netflix queue, I don't think you would click on it. I don't know necessarily that you would unless you knew about it.
I feel like, honestly, I mean, like with what everyone's going through right now, we're so starved for like new content or just something that maybe you missed out on. I feel like it might get, you know, like another bit of a revival. I mean, because it is streaming on Amazon. So like that's how I watched it. So it is available to people, and I feel like it is silly and it's fun and it kind of takes you out of, you know, what everything that's going on. And it does give you this sense of nostalgia, especially if you grew up playing that game Clue and you grew up watching some of these actors and some of the other movies and some of the actors that are in, you know, very successful shows right now, like Better Call Saul. So it's just like, I think. Yeah, it's weird because it's definitely a product of the time that it was in, but at the same time, like it couldn't have been successful when it was released. And I feel like it is one of those movies that it ages much better, and it does get funnier with time, and just like seeing some of these people's performances and how over the top and crazy they get, you really appreciate that.
Absolutely. So what else, anything else we have to add, or do you think we've covered it?
Well, so, okay. I was Googling a little bit about just Clue in general, the game, and found a couple things that were pretty funny. So originally the game was officially released in like 1949. And the original weapons that were included, there were 10 characters and 10 weapons, which got trimmed down to 6. But they one of the original weapons was a shillelagh, which is an Irish walking stick, a hypodermic syringe.
Oh my god!
A bomb.
Wait a second. How could the house still be standing? You wouldn't know.
Maybe it's just a bomb. You know, like
that's why they got rid of the bomb.
A bomb, some poison, and a fire poker. And original game, when it came out, like the pieces, the lead pipe was actually a little teeny tiny lead pipe, which is poisonous.
I was going to say, did people get lead poisoning?
I'm sure they did, but in the 60s, they changed it to steel. And then the ones you can get now, they're made out of pewter. But also one of the funny things, I guess, that I was doing in all this research, lead pipes. Lead is actually too soft to be a pipe like that and to even be threaded. So like that wouldn't be a thing that you would use for that. It would be like steel. Yeah. So I thought that was kind of funny and interesting.
So not even the board game Clue really makes sense at the end of the day.
No,
is what we're
they
saying.
Didn't quite get it right. But what's cool is that a lot of these board games, like the birth of them, were developed during World War II, when these soldiers had, you know, like long times where they'd just be kind of waiting around during air raids and stuff. So the guy who actually developed it, Anthony Pratt, he created the board game Clue, which was originally called Murder. And then when it was turned into Clue, it was
forward.
Yeah, it was actually called Cluedo, which is supposed to be a play on words, like with Clue, and then like something do meant I play in Latin. And then like when Parker Brothers bought it, they changed it just to Clue because it was just easier for people. So there's like a cool evolution with that game and just like the time period and, you know, like America's history and being in World War II and all of the crazy board games that came out of the invention of a lot of these soldiers. And
yeah, that's incredible.
The guy, yeah, Anthony Pratt, like he was a big time murder mystery fan and he just loved, he played piano at like rich people's parties for murder mystery dinners. So like while he was in the war, it was just kind of a way for him to escape from that. And his wife actually helped him with the board game design and everything. And so like there's like some cool history with the game itself and just board games in general. And while I was like reading about how this movie got made at all, I forget who it was, but it was about, I think it was one of the producers, Landis, or he was a director.
Yes. Yes.
So he had.
Well, he's not that he was the story. He came up with the story for it, but he was also a famous director as well.
Yes. So he had written to somebody about, I'm not going to be able to find it. I wish I'd written it down. But the point that I'm making is he had written to somebody and they wrote back to him. And he, in his interview, specifically stated, you know, I received this beautiful letter on this just beautiful onion skin paper. And I was like, what is onion skin paper? So then I went on this rabbit hole down researching about onion skin paper. It seems pretty nice.
that seems delicious.
Yeah, I didn't know that was a thing, but it is. So that's kind of cool.
Now we all know.
Yeah. So, you know, if you're looking for
that, should have been a murder weapon in Clue.
It should have, like, get a crazy paper cut. But it was just, I mean, I really enjoyed the movie, and I enjoyed getting to like read about some of the stories and the weird little facts that, you know, happened and going into making this movie and how it came to be. And the fact that, you know, it's successful now. I mean, like opening weekend, it made $2 million and it cost 15 to make. And I guess right now it's gross. It's at 14.6. So it still hasn't made back what, but you know, that's not a huge flop anymore. Like they're just,
it's okay.
You know,
it's okay. It did its best. And you know what? I'm happy that this movie has found its audience now, because it has enough charm that it doesn't deserve to be forgotten. It deserves to have like people like praising it and lauding it and holding it up on this pedestal. It also predicted COVID-19. We should have paid more attention. There's social distancing, like there's a lot of stuff about like if you go off in pairs, somebody will get murdered. I don't know. I'm trying to make this work, but
I agree with you though, and the fact that they were all quarantined in this house and they had multiple times to leave, but they chose not to.
It's good advice, but then people kept getting murdered inside.
Yes, but it's because they were together. They weren't.
Oh, you're right. You're right. They didn't social distance.
That's why. Mm-hmm. You're correct. That's exactly why.
So we learned a lot from Clue, I'd say. And on that note, I guess final ratings, we will say on a scale from 1 to 5, let's say flames on the side of your face.
Okay.
How many flames on the sides of your face would you give Clue?
I'll give it 4.
Oh, great. I'll give it 3.5.
Okay. Because I had never seen it before, and I did think it was a fun watch. I agree with you that it was a little slow to start, but once you get past that, it is really fun. I do think it's a fun quarantine movie to watch.
Yes.
It's free on Amazon, so.
If you don't have the board game Clue, why not watch the movie Clue?
Yeah, and the thing is you don't even need to have played the movie. or played the game to or appreciate the movie. Yeah. Like, that's the thing. It's like, you don't need to have played the game to think it's fun. But if you have played the game, it just adds this whole level of, like, nostalgia. Like, for me, you know, like, playing with my cousins and stuff growing up and, like, or my family, it was just a fun board game. And I remembered, like, always fighting over who got to be which character and, like, who got, you know, which thing. And so, like, I appreciated it on a lot of levels. I would not say it's the funniest movie that I've seen. And I did like the lack of blood in it, which I know, I'm sure, for, like, ratings purposes and, you know, for the audience and whatever. But it's like, when people would get shot, there would be no blood. Like,
yes, nobody would get, no one would really get all that murdered. They'd be murdered, but not that bad.
Yeah, but I
was
enjoyed
nice.
It.
It was nice murder.
So I really appreciate you, on opening my eyes to this movie, because, I mean, I'll be honest with you, I didn't even know it was a comedy when I knew nothing about it other than it was called Clue. I knew Tim Curry was in it, and I knew it was supposed to be based off the board game, and that was it. So I was,
you know,
not,
so much more.
Yeah, and I was not disappointed. I will say I was not disappointed. I will say, though, that I was expecting it to be a lot funnier based off of our previous conversation and your glowing review of it.
I know, God, that's gonna be on the internet forever. There haven't been many episodes of Missing Frames where I've, like, been like, this movie's amazing, and then come back and be like, actually, you know, it wasn't that amazing, but it was still pretty good.
What are the other ones that were maybe amazing and not great?
Not this is the only one I can think of. I am usually a genius and always have great taste, so it rarely happens.
Oh, well, sure.
I am
I
am the best podcast host, so I would never mislead my audience in that way. So it's a very rare occasion. This is one of the only, and I would not, even if I did, which I never do, I would not tell you which other movies were. You'd have to go back and listen to all of Missing Frames to find out.
I'll just have to go through the library. I mean, I got tons of time now.
Everyone's got tons of time, so everyone should listen to Missing Frames. But Carly, if people wanted to find you out there on the internet, that sounds so creepy, especially after talking about Clue and murder. We probably shouldn't phrase it that way. But if people wanted to, like, follow you and see how cool you are, where are you on social media?
So I am only on Instagram, and it's at Carly Does Makeup, and that's Carley Does Makeup. There is another person, also Carly Does Makeup, that doesn't spell it with an E. And she and I have been, like, tagged in each other's things sometimes. And I'm like, what the heck is this? And it's not me. And she does, like, this bridal makeup. So I'm sure she gets very confused when there's, like, monsters.
Right. And horrible gore makeup effects. Yeah.
Yeah.
This has been a running theme of the past couple of Missing Frames episodes, where we have had to talk about our different social media names across platforms because other people, like, for instance, there's another Sean Dorman on Twitter.
Yeah.
So I have to be at Yay Sean Dorman on Twitter. It's very frustrating, but I'm glad this has been a theme of the past.
You understand. You spell Sean, you know, a little bit differently than some other people spell Sean. So
a little bit more correctly, I would say.
I would agree. I personally think phonetically, the way that your name is spelled, it looks most correct.
I would agree with that as well. And I think that people out there who also agree with both of us should go ahead and follow me at Sean Dorman on Instagram, which is, again, the correct spelling of Sean and Sean Dorman. And really the only Sean Dorman you need to follow. There are no others. But
yeah, why would you follow any other?
But this has been such a delight. Carly, let's do this again, please.
Yes, no, I would absolutely love to. I always love coming on talking about our movies with you, and, you know, I love that I introduced you to Marilyn Monroe and you introduced me to Clue. So
it's a French maid. We'll make it happen. It'll be great. It'll be good.
It'll be great.
Thank you. Thank you for being here, and thank you everyone for listening. We will see you soon. Will we see them soon?
No, stay safe, everybody. Stay inside.
Stay safe. Yeah, we're not gonna see you anytime soon.